tip today in association with Slattery's of Pecan, your main Peugeot dealer for over 50 years in the Premier County. Slattery'sGarage.ie.
Thanks, Amy. Welcome back to the final hour of Tip Today. We're live from Pierce Street in Nenagh today. Always a pleasure to be here. And of course, our friends dropping into us to say hello, which we kind of like because they're good to us and they bring goodies and all sorts of stuff as well. Now, before we meet our panelists this week, Trudy Waters, who's our producer, is with me in studio. We've been inundated with text, Trudy, and you're going to give us sort of a taste of what we're getting in, aren't you?
Yeah, we have pages and pages and pages. So apologies if I don't get to them all, I'm afraid. But we'll start near the beginning. A Northtip caller got in contact to say, "Morning, Fran, I wouldn't have confidence in any politician at this present moment. I'm at the stage where I wouldn't vote again. The whole country is on its knees." And of course, we're talking about the whole Anne and Kelly interview this morning and, you know, the country being on the cusp of going to the country. John got in touch to say, "Alan, you look all the same, attack each other. You all need to be cleaned out. You're all a joke." Then Jamie got in touch in Nenagh to say, "Best of luck to everyone in the upcoming election. Roads in a very bad state near Burgess and drains need to be organised and badly tarred." Another caller got in touch to say, "A whistleblower is a whistleblower and no one wants to work with them. That's a fact. I believe Francis Fitzgerald. The sooner Leo goes to the country, the better. And let's see how we feel about it. Francis Fitzgerald should not step down." Then John Gleeson in Portrow got in contact to say, "Asked Mr. Kelly why Mr. McCabe threw the rattle out of the pram in the first place." Eric got in touch to say that Alan Kelly is probably stating the real problem. The inept civil servants is at the root of this problem. The only saving grace for them is the majority of politicians can't tie their shoelaces without them, and that's the ace that the civil servants hold. Another positive for Alan Kelly, the only TD who works so hard to do the right thing. He's not afraid to question whoever needs to be questioned, and Alan Kelly's supported there. Someone who is not an Alan Kelly supporter, "What about all the money he wasted on Irish water? Alan Kelly is a hypocrite." And that's from a Nenagh listener. Then Mike got in touch to say, "God, Fran, I'd say Enda Kenny must have enjoyed his breakfast this morning in all that he's away from all of this. Regards," says Mike. Paddy says, "America electing Trump was a massive joke. A general election Ireland over an email is an even bigger joke." That comes in from Paddy.
It's interesting because when you consider the issue of the emails in American politics.
Does Alan Kelly do anything else but try to bash Sinn Féin? He doesn't want an election, but he's afraid of losing his seat. Fact is, when he was in government when all of this Maurice McCabe stories arose. He's backtracking on things now, big time.
Well, we put that to him this morning that he was, of course, in government at that time, yeah.
Bill got in touch in Templemore to say, "Don't delay Deputy Kelly too long. He's a lot to do in spicing up the Dáil proceedings today. Godspeed to you, Alan." And that comes in from the very witted-tongued Bill. Another then in mid-tip said, "For the sake of a better Tipperary, Alan Kelly would be better off getting on with Lowry instead of constantly trying to knock him. We all know Lowry has always and will always top the poll, so get on with it and let's have a strong voice for Tipperary from all RTDs." Another again says, "Alan has a personal vendetta against every Sinn Féin TD. And then Martin got in contact in Bohor Lahan, Martin Lynch. He said, "Let's be frank here, Fran. The fact is, you've given Alan Kelly an open mic this morning and failed to ask the hard questions of him yet again. No one came to another TD in Tipperary about the ETB because they had nothing to answer." Martin Lynch.
That's very interesting indeed. Well, we asked him everything, in fact, and we gave him a bit of a run this morning because, in fairness, three different TDs had a go at him during the week, and he certainly had things to answer, and that's what we put to him.
Alan Kelly's arrogance is outstanding. Isn't it amazing that everyone else is wrong and Alan is always right? Ask Alan what kind of employment he can offer to the ordinary people of Nenagh. That comes in from Delia. Margaret Stone says, "Alan Kelly sharpening the knife to stab Brendan Howlin. It's all about I." Positives there. Alan Kelly, Carmel says, "Alan Kelly is so refreshing, straight talking, and we need more like him. Don't change Alan." Then moving on. Oh, gas. One more, sorry. Gas and water in Nenagh, Silver Mines Project, First Data, Sky Innovation Park, all delivered by Labour and Alan Kelly. Another says, "Alan is just so arrogant. He just needs to get on with his job. He barely got elected the last time around." Okay, we're going to move off Alan Kelly now and move on to other issues in relation to that beautiful wonderful you did there. I wonder where that young Jack thought, Fran, that young man caring for his brother is an inspiration. What an absolute dote. Maybe if more young people took time out to look after the less fortunate spent with them, we'd have less of the problems that we have in this country. And it goes on like that.
He's very impressive.
Inspirational.
And by the way, if you want to see him, he's on the Late Late Show.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. A couple of more there then, just in relation to what... I know I had them in front of me. Yes, just in relation to Alton and a couple of questions in on that. Now, I'm not an expert, so I had to listen back, so I only have a few of them. Is it too late to cut back roses? Apparently not, but be careful with them. What did he say? We get rid of moss. The name of that was Chloris, C-L-O-R-I-S, so that'll get rid of moss and all that nasty stuff on your pavements. And in terms of the briars and the nettles and all of that kind of nasty stuff, it's called SPK Brushwood Killer. So that's SPK Brushwood Killer. That's for the nettles. And then for the moss,
you're becoming such an expert, isn't it? Brilliant.
My mother would fall, drop to the floor, Sharon.
Trudy, thanks very much indeed for that. All right, we will introduce you to our Friday panel in just a few moments, but do keep your text coming into us, 083-311-3311. It's 9 minutes past 11.
If it matters to you, it matters to us. Call TIP today on 1-800-938-007.
And you're very welcome back to TIP today, and it's time to introduce you, excuse me, to our Friday panel. With us is Nuala Wolfe. Nuala is a journalist, an author, and indeed a freelance journalist for various publications, including the Irish Independent and the Irish Examiner. You're welcome, Nuala. Also with us is Brendan Lee, and Brendan is a well-known entertainer and indeed an addiction counsellor as well. And we say hello to John G. O'Dwyer, who is an educator and an author, a contributor to the Irish Times, and of course, long associated with Tip Hill Walking as well. You're all very welcome, and thanks indeed
for
coming in. And fair play. Needless to say, there's no prizes for guessing that we are going, first of all, to the recent debacle in the Dáil and the plight of Francis Fitzgerald. And of course, since we gave you an indication of what it is that we'll be talking about today, we seem to be on the cusp of a general election. But first of all, let's go to the people of Tipperary and see what they have to say about where we are with all of this controversy.
I take an interest in them, but I think people, it's not that they don't care, but they expect it. They know what's happening around the country. It's just it took a long time to come out, so people are just less angered by it because they're not sensitized to it. They know what's happening. It's just now that people actually have to pay for it, and the guards are more shocked than we are about it.
I think the whistleblower, I think he got a very raw deal. Very. And it's very sad, like, you know, to think that we are living in a country that, well, if I may use the word, corrupt.
Yes, I think they care passionately. I certainly do. I think our guards, the rank and file, may well be up to the job, most of them, I'm sure. But I think they've been dramatically misled for at least 30 years. And the top rank all need to be fired. And we need to bring in Canadians. We can't have Brits because for the obvious reason, so we need Canadians, Australians, New Zealanders to come here and run our police force for 3-5 years and then gradually bring back the paddies. But we've got the Kremlin in the park and they can't communicate with the rank and file. They can't lead them. They are dysfunctional and our government needs to stand up to them.
No man's life is entitled to be destroyed. Of course there's wrong. There's wrongdoings on every side. But there is a big cover-up, and they're nice and shifting from place to place just to cover up, to be forgotten about. Our clergy done that. They destroyed our Catholic Church. And I'm a practicing Catholic and always will be. Will be. But that's what they done. What did they do? You cannot investigate yourself.
And that's the views of the people of County Tipperary. Now, needless to say, that vox pop was taken before there was news that there could well be a general election looming very, very soon indeed. All right, let's go to Nuala first of all. Nuala, you were nodding quite a bit during that and a little wry smile as well. Where do you think we are at this stage in terms of people caring one way or another about an email to Francis Fitzgerald when there's issues out there like housing and rural crime and hospital waiting lists and trolleys and all of that sort of thing? Do the people really care?
I think listening to what people in Tipperary were saying there, I think what underlines it all for me is that, you know, we do have a sense of decency in this country and what is decent. And I was listening to, like, Mary Lou talking on various broadcasting networks, you know, during this week and just up to yesterday as well. And regardless of who got an email, when it was sent, I think what she's saying, what people are struck by, is the sense that a decent man, a whistleblower, somebody that the government said that they would support, was doing the right thing. It appears to her that the minister didn't care about him, was willing to ignore emails, throw him to the wolves. Have it kind of made apparent to anybody who was in the Guards or indeed thinking about whistleblowing in general, don't do it, your life will be ruined. And I think that that's what kind of upsets people mostly. As well as that, I think, you know, if there's going to be a general election, like I was on Twitter today, where you kind of get the, you know, the thoughts as they emanate from people, whether they're good, bad, or how well thought out. And there is issues that people are more concerned about coming up to Christmas, homelessness, it's a cold snap. Like, why is this on the table now? In fact, somebody even suggested to me, probably most cynically, is this Fianna Fáil's chance now again to say, lads, the economy's on the up. You know, we like when the economy's on the up. We hold the balance of power here. It's not time for us to be in government. You know, Fine Gael is often said to be like they clean up the mess after Fianna Fáil has had a run of it again. That's extremely cynical, but, you know, I think the Irish people out there were very savvy, and there's definitely a sense of, you know, towards McCabe, I think, of feeling a decent man, like your neighbour, like your father, whatever. How is he faring in this? And also a bit of cynicism about
any
what's really going to happen.
Any sympathy for Francis Fitzgerald whatsoever? Because, I mean, you might be forgiven for thinking that at worst she was inadequate to do her job. But was there anything Machiavellian about what she decided to do in any way, do you think? I mean, she said she had legal process to worry about and that legally she couldn't really interfere in the workings of the commission at that time.
I don't think, like, I mean, Mary Lou was saying as well, like, an email comes in and mentions McCabe. How can you forget about that? It's such a big issue. If you're in a job like that and you don't remember getting emails, you shouldn't be in a job like that, basically.
Right, so she should go as far as you're concerned.
I think she's going, and I think she's definitely going, because Leif Radker has said so many times that he's standing behind her so many different ways. That to me is like a kind of house of cards signal. Right. She's going, guys, you know.
Brendan, you've said to me on lots of occasions, you're not all that fond of politicians. Does this just add to that feeling?
Well, it probably adds to it on some level, but it doesn't surprise me. You know, like, I mean, the reality here, and I think this is, you know, I'd need about 2 hours to talk about this. But the reality here is that if you look at any institution, let it be the church, let it be a state body, a semi-state body, The whole thing about an institution is its survival. Mm. Now, Maurice McCabe rocked the boat. To me, I worked in a particular institution. I'm not going to go into name and stuff or create major controversy for Tip FM. But I worked in a particular institution and I saw people like Maurice McCabe who blew the whistle on situations that were going on, and they were ostracised. There was one girl actually ostracised to such an extent that they said she was mad.
Right.
Right. Now, because the institution has to survive, Maurice McCabe became the scapegoat. Right? Now, what they did was then, they closed ranks, they did everything in their power to actually make this guy out to be bad and mad. Right. Now, then it landed in a political, I suppose.
And only for he was clever enough himself, a very clever man, to record conversations do all of that, he would have been thrown under the bus.
Well, I suppose if he was really clever, Fran, he would have said nothing.
Right, I suppose.
Because the thing about it is that you can't take on an institution and hope to win without something happening to yourself. Now, you have to throw caution to the wind, and I wouldn't do it personally. I saw it within an institution, and I worked in two of them, in two different institutions run by the state, and I saw it happening. I was witness to it. And now it would break your heart to see that, like Nuala spoke about, you know, that we live in a country where people are supposed fair-minded and whatever. I'm paraphrasing what she said, but the point about it that I see is that Francis Fitzgerald is now becoming the scapegoat. And I remember when I when I trained as a counsellor, I remember one on a particular Saturday, we were given a task, the group that were training, and we were given a task as a group to do certain things, you know, as in work out certain aspects of counselling and whatever. We were given just tasks to do. And what appeared was working as a group was that people took on different roles within that group. So the role you would take on would be the role that you took on maybe in your, within your family.
Yes.
Now, the person who actually said, stood up and said that we were doing it wrong actually ended up the scapegoat within the group.
Isn't that interesting? But what, and again, I'm paraphrasing, what is that famous saying about real evil is when good men stay silent?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah, well, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, yeah, you're going to pay a price.
Yeah, and you have to be prepared for it.
And obviously, Maurice McCabe, as you said, he did what he had to do to be prepared for it. But, you know, it's so sad to see it happening.
Right. John, you think there will be a general election, don't you?
Oh, I think it's over, yes. I think it's over at this stage. I mean, I think the confidence and supply arrangement is over. So whether the politicians will really want to go out, I mean, the horrendous scenario of maybe a general election on the 22nd of December, and having to go out and canvass on the way up to that, and how difficult canvassing is at this time, not only for weather, but really you can't go knocking on doors, it's dark. So you can't go knocking on doors after 5 o'clock. Mm. So that may sober them up. But I think the confidence in supply arrangement is certainly over. I think what will happen is, I think there won't be any confidence, and I could see perhaps next April or something like that, when the weather is a bit better, if there isn't an election immediately, I think there will be an election.
Why didn't, but I'm just thinking of the Catherine Zapone thing with Enda Kenny. It seemed to me much more serious than this if Fianna Fáil wanted to pull the plug.
Yeah, I think it's what the other two panellists have been saying. It is, I think there's a feeling that there are insiders and there are outsiders, and that the insider thing is going on far too long. And I think the problem for Frances Fitzgerald is that she was seen as being too closely allied with the retired commissioner. She flew too close to her. I think her wings have eventually melted now, and I think in that particular tent, I think, you know, if you put it bluntly, I think her career is certainly toast, whether there is an election or there isn't. It's not the specifics of the thing. I don't think she's done anything hugely wrong, but it's just the idea of not acting on something, and that she was at least, well, I wouldn't say colluding, but she was allowing a situation to go on in which a very decent man was being attacked by an institution, and those attacks continued on even when public opinion was totally on the side of this man and the type of, you know, sympathy we all have for him.
Alan Kelly was making the point this morning, Nuala, that we have a toxic Department of Justice right now. Would you go along with that?
It's a difficult one to say, but I do think that, like, when you're going down the street and you're talking to people, one of the men there put it quite succinctly when we said we need to have Canadians come in or Australians. We have a very unique situation in Ireland, really, where our police force, I mean, it's you go up towards the ranks, and that can only, like as some of the other people were saying here today, that can only encourage a spirit of kind of shutting down and not talking and not discussing things. In other police forces around the world, you know, jobs come up and you can apply for managerial positions. I think that's much more healthy, whether it's the guards or it's the Catholic Church, where you have just one culture that permeates from the ranks up. It's very unhealthy.
I'm not sure that we're alone with that. I mean, look at the American police force and how they kind of closed ranks when it came to all sorts of atrocities over the years. I mean, it seems to be a thing. It's part of the camaraderie, isn't it, of a police force?
You have to be very close to each other when you're in the police force, and that is one of the things. So there is a feeling, I think, sometimes of a them and us. We have to stand together because we are out there fighting
and
crime.
And in certain situations, you can understand that.
You can certainly understand that when you go out and do it. But what happens is then that culture moves on, and it becomes to permeate everything that happens in the organisation, and everything that in any way criticises the organisation is then seen as a threat which must be dealt with. And you know, I sometimes see when I past Temple Moor, the Garda training centre, you know, and there's a huge wall around it and there's security barriers at the front. Yeah. And it contrasts very much with how army officers are trained. They go down and they do their normal degree down in UCG. I think that may open them up. And, you know, if you look at it, the Irish Army has been a wonderful example of an almost totally scandal-free institution.
Mm. Any light at the end of the tunnel from this? Did anybody come out of this debacle shining as far as you're concerned, well, Brennan? Since he knowing full the answer you're going to give me. But well, go on anyway.
Yeah, I suppose, like, you asked the question there, was that the Department of Justice become toxic?
Mm.
Well, I think myself, like, if you were running a company, you know, as in, you know, looking for something to be produced at the end of your work.
Yes.
Now, if you look at what's being produced, there's homelessness, addiction problems, there's problems within the Gardaí, there's problems with health, big problems with our health situation. Mm-hmm. So if I'm part of a management structure and the end result is all this negativity, like, wouldn't you think like that, you know, there's something being done wrong?
Yes, yeah.
So that would be my philosophy around it, like that. You know, like, if I was a part of a government that produced homelessness, addiction, health problems, and if I was looking, I'd be inclined to wear a balaclava and not put my face on a poster on a pole looking for re-election because I haven't done my job.
Right, but is there an alternative there to what we have that...
Well, you see, unfortunately, there's not, Fran, because right. I think myself that to be a politician, you have to be a certain type of an animal. and that takes someone who has very little conscience, number one, and is brilliant at telling lies, number two.
And well, on the,
what
sorry,
I would say, though, is we could just compare that. I think we shouldn't say a plague on all your houses. I mean, in some ways, politicians have served as well, because if you want to compare the situation here, compare it with Zimbabwe.
Yes.
And so I think, you know, we could be in a lot worse situation, but that doesn't mean that our politicians should be above criticism, and certainly in this situation with Jerry McCabe, they deserve whatever criticism is being heaped.
Right.
Absolutely.
But you have the joys of democracy, where you take an issue like this, it turns into some sort of political crisis because it suits them to make it into a political crisis, you know, and you can't help but be a little bit cynical about them all.
Mm. Yes, and that's exactly it. I think a little dose of cynicism is certainly a good thing, but as Harold Macmillan said, what takes you down is the small things.
It's dear boy.
I think Leo Varadkar probably has a whole array of different socks planned for the months ahead, you know, and I think he will do whatever he can to hang on to power, and if that means his minister is going, she's going. I mean, like, he's just starting out. He's part of that.
Well, I saw on Murphy last night that they're sticking with her. They're hanging in there.
I would be very surprised if that happens. I think that's what we've been told, and then it'll just become untenable, or they'll have some other word that they'll bandy about, and she's going. She's definitely going.
We definitely have two voices of cynicism here with us today, and John is giving us a little balance on that, and I'll keep my own counsel.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com.
Welcome back, and our Friday panel today, Brendan Lee. Brendan is a well-known entertainer and addiction counsellor. Nuala Wolfe is with us, who's a journalist and author, and John G. O'Dwyer, who you know very well, is an educator involved with a walking contributor to the Irish Times as well, and we're delighted to have them in studio today. We're moving on to Gerry Adams now. Of course, recent announcement that he is stepping down from the party, and we put it to the people of Tipperary. Gerry Adams, hero or villain? And this is what they had to say.
Oh, hero, 100%.
Why do you think that?
He just, I think a lot of people villainize him because it's easy. Joe, it's easy to do, but a lot of things he says is, it's understandable. And like, they haven't had a chance, I think it's since 1918, to actually have a run of our government. So, I mean, a lot of the things he's saying are very forward, but people are easy to dismiss him because of his relations with the old system.
Well, I wouldn't class him as a hero, and I certainly wouldn't class him either as a villain. They believe in their principles, just like we believe in ours. So that's the only way I can come up with that one.
It's a very complex question. Gerry Adams has done some good things, but by and large, he hasn't. He's held back our country for 30 years. 3,600 people died unnecessarily, and the development of Ireland has been dramatically reduced. So he's an interesting character, but not one that I would like to have at my dinner table.
He's most definitely not a villain. He's a man done an awful lot. They should ask themselves, would the peace treaty be still there and for Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness?
I think he's a hero to the people of Northern Ireland. I think if the same thing happened here in Clonmel, which did happen during Cromwell's time, and this country has been full of violence and rebellion down through the years. So what they did, I would hope the people of Clonmel would do, would be rebel against, look for their civil rights. And that's what they were looking for, civil rights.
Well, in my personal opinion, a villain. He just gives me the creeps, even looking at him on telly or listening to him. He just gives me the creeps. He's a villain of villains, in my opinion.
He's a villain of villains, says that lady. All right, let's go to the panel on this. John G., do you want to take that first of all? Gerry Adams, villain or hero? Or is that too black and white for a very complex character?
Of course it is, absolutely. It's far too black and white, certainly. The thing I would say about this is, if you want to call him a villain, call him a terrorist, you've then got to put Nelson Mandela into that as well, because that's exactly where he came from. And like, he's the, you know, the nearest thing we have to be, you know, a saint who hasn't been canonised yet. So I think it's far too complex. We must think about this. We must think of where Gerry Adams came from. He came from an area of huge deprivation in Belfast. And they had, the nationalist community up there had been deprived for over 50 years, and there was no sign of it changing. And the only way he felt you could change that was to resort to violence. I don't agree with that. My view on how you change things is the way Gandhi did it in India. But there are very, very few Gandhis around, and it's also easy for us who remove from the situation to tut tut down here. But I suspect if most of us were brought up in Belfast at that time, we might not be in the Provisional IRA. We would certainly have had a lot of sympathy for them. And so he came from that. But the great thing was he changed. Remember, and it was a great, I think, cost to himself that he tried to do that, because I think there was a danger. Firstly, Delilah's tried to assassinate him, but at one stage there was actually a danger to his life from dissidents who felt he was selling out the Republican ideal. Mm.
And so there's still that element. That element is still alive.
It's
well,
still there. Yeah. So yeah. I think, yeah, so overall, I would think his contribution has been a positive one. You know, I suppose I'm not libeling him when I say most people probably think he was the commander in chief of the IRA in Belfast. He denies that, of course, but that is such a thing. And some terrible things were done at that time. But I think overall, without him, we certainly would not have had the peace process.
And you're absolute about that. I mean, because people will say, look at the role of John Hume, look at the role of, you know, Albert Reynolds, Martin Manser. But without Gerry Adams,
It didn't matter. It doesn't matter who was at the table. You could have no peace process if the Provisional IRA were not sitting at
if
that
table. If the men with the Armalites, he brought them.
They
would
bring him on board. And you needed Gerry Adams to do that.
Right. What do you think, Brendan?
Well, I couldn't have said it better myself. I have to say that, like, right. I agree with every word that has been said. The one thing that you have to remember is that we were removed from a down here, far removed from a down here, and people become a product of their environment. Like, I have had three grandparents from Northern Ireland. My father was born in Tyrone, and he didn't speak much about the North. But he moved down to live in Burr when he's early 20s. But I remember at one particular occasion, he was telling me he remembers going to Mass in Oma with his mum and dad. And his father was actually in the British Army, and they were spit upon. And he remembers that distinctly. He remembered that distinctly when he was 6, 7 years of age. So it's easy to sit down here, you know, and say that it was terrible. Now, what went on was atrocious. I'd have to condemn any violence, you know, and I wouldn't be a violent person. Now, I'd have a short fuse, and I'd rear up and all that sort of thing. But I couldn't even harm a little kitten, let alone a human being. But, like, what was going on up there at the time was unbelievable violence, unbelievable discrimination, and Gerry Adams and Martin McGuinness and those guys were a product of their environment.
But I suppose I have to put it to you, Gene McConville, you know, was there more that he could have done by way of...
Well, that was his role. That was his choice.
Yeah.
You know, like, whatever. Like, I believe in God. I believe in a life after now. I believe that when we die, we will have to answer on some level. But I think that our Creator will judge us because they'll be able to see into our heart. And I wouldn't judge any man.
Mm.
And because I've dealt with people who have done all sorts of things while they were in the madness of addiction. But who am I to judge them? And I wouldn't call them either a villain or a hero. But what I would see as someone who was a product of their environment and made a decision to go a particular way in their life. And also, which is very important, what this man said here beside me, was that he changed.
Mm.
And any man that's able to change and create a change within themselves is a good man. And like earlier on, we spoke about my opinion about politicians. And would you believe it? He's one of the very few men that I would look at and admire.
Would you? Indeed?
I would.
Yeah.
He has a statesman appearance about him.
Right. And would you admire... Now I'm getting onto something completely different. I'm going to keep this to very minimum. But would you admire Paisley in the same way in that he came from a background
I did actually. I did actually.
Okay.
And I also believe that Paisley was very good for his constituents, whether it be Catholic or Protestant. But I had an admiration for Paisley as well, even though he came out with stuff that would turn your stomach.
Right.
But there was something about him statesman-like. And Charlie Haughey was the same, believe it or not, in my eyes, that they had a statesman appearance about them. I was in a room one night in Ross Grey years ago, and Michael Kennedy walked in, and I admired him because he had a statesman appearance about him.
Yeah, some people might say Robert Mugabe had as well.
I'm just talking about the way I...
Sorry, that was
physical. Yeah, sure, of course. Yeah.
Nuala, what do you think? Hero, villain?
Well, again, it's too simplistic. He was neither and maybe both. You know, like, listen to the lads there. It's interesting. I was born in Belfast. My mother was from Belfast. All my older siblings, when we came down in 71, we were 14, 13, 9. I was the baby. And my dad was a secondary school teacher. And like John was saying, you know, because he taught, you know, teenagers, he said to my mother, this will last 20 years or more. This is 71. She didn't want to leave, but like there was, you know, British Army patrols and it was very, very scary. And he said that what he most feared was that we would get caught up on the violence because young people are impassioned. And I agree with that. I was actually reading a very old interview that Gerry Adams gave in 1995 where he said that when he was 10, his family very seriously considered emigrating to Australia. And he says if he had gone, he believed he would have been very interested in politics and Irish history, but he thinks he would have become a teacher. And he was always very, he had one son, he was always very kind of sketchy about it. He said he didn't want to, he'd kind of burdened him with enough baggage was the phrase he used. And interestingly, his own son became a teacher. And I think as you grow up, you look at what was maybe wrong in your own life and you want normality for your own family. And he certainly wanted that for his son. I mean, so on a personal basis, that influenced your own political views and wanting
now, I'm
to
sure
change
a
things.
Lot of people would be screaming at the radio, what about the sons who didn't get that chance and were caught up in that violence and were murdered or were killed as they were out there perpetrating some of that violence?
Well, you know, I can't argue with that. It's a very bloody situation. Everybody has a different path. I think he tried to do what he could in his own way. He never admitted he was in the IRA. He said initially, anyhow, that all the books he wrote, he was giving money to charity, that he wasn't taking the proceeds of it. Maybe there's a certain amount of appeasing your own conscience there. I think, you know, for obviously probably the most horrific thing, you know, the kidnapping of that woman in Belfast, the mother of 10. Did he have anything to do with it? If he did, I'm sure it weighs very heavily on his conscience. I don't feel I can judge him because, as I feel, you know, I suppose one of the other big criticisms of him was in 1993, he carried the coffin of Thomas Begley. I don't know whether you remember that incident where the bomb went off and 10 or 11
killed
years,
him.
And he knew what he was doing carrying that coffin, and he got terrible abuse for it, probably rightly, but he had to try and pull different sections together, keep people online that they would agree with the peace process. Not an easy job. So I'm not going to judge him anyhow.
The other thing too is remember that he was certainly, when we'll put it this way, at least he was close to the IRA when terrible atrocities were committed, like we'll say the Bloody Friday attacks in Belfast. But remember that there was no monopoly on violence there. Some of the most horrendous things were also carried out both by the loyalist community and by the British Army in the north. Sure. Only they were given the legitimacy of having state support behind them in some way. It was legitimate. Right. He saw himself as a soldier, the British Army saw themselves as a soldier, as soldiers, and in that kind of situation, I'm afraid there is collateral damage, terrible sympathy for the people who lost out there, but we have to move on from
all right. Yeah. Well, we have to move on as well to our final topic. So let's take a break. Panel staying with us.
I wouldn't have had the price of a Mini, let alone a Mercedes. Mm. But it brought it home to me, like, on a personal level. Here I was looking for comfort in something outside myself. Now, it was a lesson in, I suppose, the way an addict's minds work and the way most people's minds
sure,
work.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
As John says, people surround themselves with material stuff thinking that the answer is within that, and it's not. They're all illusions.
And on that note from Brendan, we'll leave you. Thanks to John G and thanks to Newland and thanks to Brendan. It was a fantastic panel today. I really enjoyed it. Truly produced, Owen is on the way and I'm back with you on Monday. Enjoy the rest of Black Friday.